Broadcasted live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
I'm telling you, the moment I get a ticket to leave South Africa, I'm leaving for good. I'm leaving for good. You can have someone who doesn't even have matric, no experience whatsoever, to lead a very critical portfolio like that. I'm not happy, Joe. I've been listening. I'm not happy. I'm really not happy. Just imagine now, I'm deputy principal. I've never led anything. For some reason, I just tomorrow become deputy principal. Does it make sense?
Good evening, Ospimelo. In my opinion, you know what I thought. Getting McKenzie should have been appointed as Minister of Police or Minister of Home Affairs. Congratulations to General Bantu Holomisa. At least he should be appointed as Minister of Defence because he got the experience. That's my opinion.
24 minutes after 9 o'clock, we continue to take your reaction. Obviously, we have now a cabinet. The 7th administration is now fully in gear. We suppose tomorrow they'll be sworn in. We wanted to have also some analysis, but continue to send those voice notes, and you can also give us a call on 086-000-0959. Dr. Stembile Mbete is on the line with us. She's a political analyst. Thank you so much for your time. Good evening and welcome, Doc.
Hi, Tmelo. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Your reaction to the new cabinet?
Well, look, I thought that the new cabinet was better than I initially expected. I think it was always going to be a balancing act, right? Between not just the members of this sort of grand coalition or government of national unity, but also balancing the interests within the ANC itself, right? Yeah. That although the president has his prerogative as the president of the republic to appoint cabinet, he was doing so while trying to balance a great many interests, both within his own political party and amongst those political parties that he then is governing with. A consequence of that, and I wasn't surprised by this, is that the executive is very large. Yeah. Look, it's not that much larger than the last executive, where we had 75 ministers and deputy ministers, and then the president and deputy president. But now it's 77. But it is still large, right? It's a huge number of people. There's obviously a great deal of reaction to that because of what that means in terms of the cost of the executive to the fiscus. Yeah.
He obviously started off by addressing that very fact that, look, you know, I had promised and we had hoped that we were going to shrink this cabinet, but now we find ourselves here. But the point here is that he had always been president. He had a full term. And he could have, if you really wanted a smaller cabinet, even in his first term, he could have done it.
Yes, of course he could have done. And I think that there's two things here that have made the size of our executive so large, right? And to distinguish here between, so the cabinet is made up of the president, the deputy president, and the ministers. Yeah. And then deputy ministers are not part of cabinet, but they are part of the executive generally, right? And the role of deputy ministers is kind of ill-defined in our constitution, but they are accounted for, right? In the constitution, and the use of the deputy ministerial role wasn't very prevalent, right, until 2009. President Zuma expanded the number of ministries that had deputy ministers. And then we saw that really explode under President Ramaphosa from 2018, and basically using the role of deputy minister to kind of manage interests within the ANC MEC, so to either manage those people who were in a different faction to him that still needed to be kept inside, or to reward those who had supported him. And we've seen basically that in the context of this GNU, it's just an extension of the same practice, right? Yeah. That managing the different parts or the different parties that are part of the GNU by then accommodating their leaders in the deputy ministerial position if you can't give them a minister mm-hmm. role, right? Because if we didn't have deputy ministers, we'd have 32 cabinet of 32 or 33.
Yeah.
If we didn't have deputy ministers. So there's been this expansion of this office of deputy, and there are some ministries that I think should have deputy ministers because they are the role or the work in those portfolios is large. So DIRCO, international relations and cooperation that involves so much like travel and things, basic education is one as well. Mm-hmm. But there are some others where there's been an expansion of this of these portfolios really to manage political interests more than for governance purposes.
And so when we speak then of these deputy ministers, and now we are speaking of some portfolios with two deputy ministers, just talk to us about what kind of dynamic to expect there. Because, as you said, very, you know, what they're meant to be doing there is it's slightly vague. Yes, now they have some powers, but what do you expect is going to happen with some of those dynamics?
Well, of course, it will depend on a number of factors. Firstly, are the minister and the deputy minister in a particular portfolio from the same party or from different parties? So the idea of whether or not the deputy minister is there to kind of supervise or to spy on or to keep in check the minister who's the incumbent, and vice versa, of course, where the minister is there and has been given a deputy minister that they need to sort of manage. The second thing is that it depends on the actual work of the department, right? So if you consider a department like Defence and Military Veterans, where there's two parts actually to that work, right? So there's the management of and oversight implementation of policy on defense, and then there's also that on military veterans. So you could see a split in responsibility in that way. So it'll depend on so many dynamics, both the party political dynamics, of course, personality dynamics, and then the actual governance load in a particular department.
And that makes perfect sense, except there are two ministries, portfolios, Ministry of Finance, and one, for instance, expects that this is purely for political reasons. It's one literally checking on the other, because we do have two deputy ministers here, and it's just finance.
Yes. And of course, there's now the question. So the split in finance has tended to be that there's the finance minister, and then the deputy minister of finance is part of the board of the PIC.
Yeah.
And so whether or not that'll be carried through in this administration, there's been a lot of people who've been against that arrangement. So whether it'll be continued or not, but of course, remember that the finance ministry is also participates in a large number of international organizations, and usually it's the finance minister that represents South Africa in those different organizations. And so is that responsibility perhaps going to be split together with the deputy ministers? This is especially important, of course, for next year, because South Africa is hosting the G20. And as part of the work of the G20, there is both a work for the foreign ministers, for finance ministers, and then, of course, for the president and the people that represent the president, the Sherpas. So, you know, whether or not there'll be some kind of division of labor in that way will be interesting to see as well. We know that in terms of the party political dynamics, the DA wanted to have some representation within key economic cluster ministries, and they wanted to be represented in the Ministry of Finance. So this seems to be kind of the compromise in order to accommodate that.
And we'll look at other issues around how they're going to manage. Obviously, this is also quite political more than it is administrative. But I want to just start with John Steenhuisen. You may have heard a lot of commentary around that. John Steenhuisen now being the Minister of Agriculture, a lot of talk was around him being possibly a deputy president. That wasn't to be. We find ourselves here. How do you react to this particular portfolio for John Steenhuisen, who's obviously the leader of the DA?
Well, you know, the Ministry of, or the Department of Agriculture is a hugely important one, right, for South Africa, given the role of agriculture in our GDP and in our economy, agriculture being one of the possible sort of growth areas to deal with unemployment and issues of food security being so core to a lot of our poverty alleviation issues as a country, and kind of we've seen a huge rise in food, in household food insecurity in South Africa. And so, you know, all of those issues being really, really important. So it is a significant portfolio to hold. What's interesting to me is that it was split from land reform and rural development, you know, so to accommodate two of the coalition partners by splitting a ministry that had been, you know, one and sort of giving them things that would interest them in terms of their own manifestos and their particular party positions. So giving the PAC land reform and rural development and giving the DA agriculture. It is an area for the DA, and I think one of the reasons why the DA would have been happy to take it is that it is an area where the DA could make, you know, that any minister could make some real, you know, changes and gain some quick wins that will be quickly seen and associated with them by the public, right? So if changes are made that stabilize issues like, I don't know, foot and mouth disease and bring down food prices or create a different environment or better environment for farmers and the agricultural sector more generally, the consequences of that can be quite quickly felt by the population, and then it's a political win that you can take credit for. But of course, it is also a hugely fraught and complex area, especially around issues of transformation, which the DA certainly in the last few years has tried to position itself against, right? So the transformation of the agricultural sector in terms of creating conditions for black farmers to thrive is a hugely political issue, and an issue that's actually very tied up to land. So it'll be interesting to see how some of the work on agriculture can be done, you know, without having the land portfolio attached to it. But these are areas then that make this not a very, you know, they, it's one of those areas where on the surface it looks like there could be potential for quick wins, but it actually requires a whole lot of political maneuvering. And having seen John Steenhuisen's kind of approach to politics, certainly while he was in parliament, I think he's got a lot of work cut out for him in terms of managing some of those nuances.
I mean, we obviously saw the back and forth while there were negotiations in the GNU, and sometimes we got the sense that it wasn't going so well. We all saw that. But I'm struck by the fact that this evening, as we were all anticipating Banyaza Lesufi to announce his cabinet, it was then subsequently announced that there is going to be a postponement because they, as well as the DA, don't seem to agree on issues that were raised in, you know, earlier on when the president had to announce a cabinet. I was under the impression, or we all thought, that once it was sorted out at executive level, it would have trickled down to the provinces. Tell us what you think is going on here.
Well, you know, the statement of intent does make provision that the national agreement is then also going to have implications for the composition of governments at provincial levels. And we saw that immediately with KZN. And with the way that the vote in the voting in of leadership in the KZN legislature happened quite quickly, actually, even before you know, things were settled at a national level. And so the understanding was that that would be then carried through to the other province that requires a coalition government, which is Gauteng. Mm-hmm. And given how closely, how slim the ANC's margin actually is in Gauteng, and Gauteng the ANC won 35% of the vote, yeah, compared to the DA's 27%. So there isn't as big a difference between the vote, between the totals of the ANC and the DA. And if you think of it in seat terms, the ANC has 17 out of 80 seats in the provincial legislature. The DA has 13 seats out of the 30 and out of the 80. Yes. And so it seemed kind of as a no-brainer that they would have to try and work with each other in some way. However, what seems to have happened is that their understanding of what proportional allocation actually means in Gauteng is different. They don't have the same understanding of that. But also that the ANC's understanding of what the power dimensional dynamic is at the provincial level seems to be that it is the same as it is at the national level. That the kind of choices that President Ramaphosa could make, which basically ended up giving the ANC a somewhat disproportionately higher share of the cabinet positions than the DA or other parties, that can be replicated exactly in Gauteng. And that isn't necessarily the case, right, given how much slimmer the ANC's the ANC's share of the vote is here than it is nationally. And also the complexity also in Gauteng of the governance arrangements in the metros, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we also know that the Tshwane Metro is currently under a DA-led coalition. Mm-hmm. Ekurhuleni and Joburg are under ANC-led coalitions. So the consequence of the governance arrangement in Gauteng province on those arrangements, governance coalitions in the metros is also there. So this whole set of decisions is far more complex, I think, than Banyaza Lesufi and his leadership cohort in Gauteng have been willing to concede to. And so then we've been in the situation where decisions have been made and then they have to walk back those decisions because they don't actually align with the overall, not just word, but also, not just letter, but also spirit of this coalition agreement that has been struck nationally.
Are you concerned about the sustainability of these, whether this glue will stick for the 5 years that we need this government to be in place?
Well, you know, I think that the way in which the eventual coalition was put together at national level, and I was quite amused actually to see the excitement, especially for the smaller parties, but mind you, even for the, you know, even for the DA and of the people who had gotten into those leadership positions in the executive. And that ultimately politics is about power, right? It's about power and interest.
Yeah.
And once you're very close to that, it's quite hard to reject it and say no to it.
Yeah.
So there's, I think that there's been a kind of a recognition and a management of those different interests at a national level that barring major changes in political configuration within individual parties actually bodes well for it to remain as you know, relatively stable until, I suppose, an ANC's next elective conference. The real worry for the national level the stability of the national level coalition is whether it continues to hold in provinces, right? So mm-hmm. in KZN, where the biggest party actually in KZN is MK, but that just didn't have its act together in order to form a government quickly enough. But then also the situation now happening in Gauteng, where there is an assumption, I think, within the statement of intent that a lot of the agreement at national level was also based on there being a foundation of this agreement, or that the agreement would carry through to Gauteng and to the Gauteng metros. And given the importance of Gauteng as a province for the country, you know, as the economic engine of the country in so many ways, and the importance of the metros as the economic engine of the country, having stability here matters for the broader stability of the country. And so not being able to get a working arrangement in Gauteng is then a, you know, is then a kind of a loose stitch in the in this overall fabric of coalition government that then will remain a threat and a weakness for the structural sort of cohesion of the whole arrangement nationally.
Really appreciate your take there, Dr. Stembile Mbete. Appreciate you giving us time and your take on this new cabinet that we've got now. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. When I come back, I'll be taking more of your calls on 086-000-0959, and I'm also very happy to take your voice notes on
063-688-0959. If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.